Jody here. Welcome to the Lumieres podcast. I hope those of you who tuned into our very first episode with Jamie Morrison enjoyed it. I got a few messages for really nice feedback, so it seems to have gone down quite well with you guys. Thanks for listening in, and thanks for listening in again today, if you've chosen to do so. I'm sitting here this evening. It's wet and windy in St. Leonard's on the south coast of the UK. And it feels a bit like a metaphor for the past week, really. We're sat in the dark, sat within the storm. It's windy, it's raining outside. We don't want to leave our cozy little homes and get battered about by the world. And it seems like the world is really battering people around at the moment. And there's a tendency when things get heavy for people to recoil from the things that scare us, and we close up and we shut down our hearts and our feelings, and we can't deal with it. But you know, that could help in the short term, but it's not a solution. It's what we really need is a return to our hearts and being in the heart, living from the heart in the way that we relate to society and the land and the earth, you know, with compassion and selflessness. One of the best things you can do in times like these is to just look after yourself, be kind to yourself, keep yourself strong so you can be used to your community and to your family and to your friends. And I wrote an article recently that was published by online by Rebel Society, which is all about the importance of balance. And I was talking about a few ways we can help ourselves to keep returning to this state. I'll put the link in the show notes if you want to check that out. I've had several people say they got a lot out of that. So it felt good to write that. And I hope a few more people can find it useful. It's kind of fitting that it's so dark and stormy outside today, because that was the same circumstances that I recorded today's episode with singer-songwriter and musician Carrie Tree. She came over a couple of weeks ago, and we had dinner, and then we recorded this chat, and it was kind of late at night and we were both a little bit tired. So it's kind of a relaxed, intimate conversation. It's not high energy, you know, it's kind of cozy. Feels a bit like sitting up by the fire listening to us talk about Carrie's career and her life in music. And she's been playing guitar and singing since she was a young girl, as she tells, and she's been traveling around the world and finding inspiration in the land and the song of a wide variety of cultures, as well as the kind of woods and fields of this old land of England. She's recorded in South Africa with Zulu singers and members of Ladysmith Black Mambazo. She's toured with Damien Rice and collaborated with Andy Barlow from Lamb. And she's co-produced two of her own albums, as well as soon to be starting on the third. She's a special musician, is Carrie. She's got a unique voice and a real gift for writing melody and poems with her words that weave together into these kind of spiritual hymns to the soul. You know, it's beautiful stuff, her music. And I've been lucky enough to watch her play live many times over the years, but it was really while we were living together in a small village with a few other beautiful people for a couple of years that we really became friends and got to know each other. So I was really pleased that she was up for doing the podcast, as I think she's always got a considered and thoughtful approach and a response, and I really value the way she thinks about things, and with a real level of insight. And I think that makes it really interesting to listen to. So, well, I hope so anyway. Pull yourself up a chair, make sure you're warm, get a hot mug of tea, and listen into this kind of gentle conversation with the beautiful and talented Carrie Tree. And until next time, be kind to yourself and those around you.
I've been really noticing when I drive, like, having to just keep telling my body to relax because it gets so tense, and then I'm like, realise my hands are sweating and like clinging onto the steering wheel, and I'm like, relax. It's like, no, you're still not relaxed. That's saying relax, relax. You know, like, you know, just it's such a load of information.
Much.
No. I mean, it's that thing, isn't it? Just being totally focused but relaxed. Mm. Like completely, like that holding relaxed.
It's kind of a good it's a good practice to get into that state.
Yeah.
because that state's so useful in other areas of life, you know. But though, maybe your life isn't in your own hands, and when you're on stage or something.
Well, it's very similar actually to being on stage.
To driving a car?
No, but the stress in the body.
Okay.
And the focus and the holding of, you know, like not spacing out, relaxed, not running away from it, being fully present, but not being tense present, being like completely relaxed present, you know, like and expanding and holding and not taking control, but not just being a victim to it.
It's like a kind of, it's like, I guess it's kind of taking control and releasing control.
Yeah.
At the same time, we're push and pull between the two.
Yeah.
Really interesting. I remember when I used to play live. I used to hate playing live for years. And they just couldn't get me to do it. It'd be like, JD, go play drums. There's a school concert coming up. And I'd be like, no way. You're not getting me on stage. Mm. And then eventually, once they convinced me to go on stage, it was like this. I had to imagine that I was in a bubble.
Mm.
It was like a kind of a transparent bubble, but nothing could get in.
Mm.
So there was a point where you're not aware of the people who are watching you.
Mm.
But then when you play, you're kind of like you connect quite a lot with the people who are in the room. Mm. You know, through your eyes when you're playing, or through between songs even as well, you do a lot of connection with the people that are in the room.
Mm.
Is that always been the way that you play gigs? Is that natural?
No, it's completely opposite actually. It's been quite new for me to do that. I've been really enjoying it because I used to always play like completely with my eyes closed, completely in the music and not pay attention to anybody. People would ask me to say that they'd like me to open my eyes, and I just, when I opened my eyes, found it so distracting, just completely distracting, and then just open for a second and then just close again. And it was almost like the difference between being out of the water and then in the water, you know, and just that different. And as soon as I open, it's like there's so much information going on in the room that I almost can't feel the music anymore.
So what's going on? What was going on for you when you were in the closed eye space? So are you kind of in some? Are you just fully feeling the music? Is it bodily, or are you kind of mentally? Is it a combination of physical and mental? When that, you know, how would you describe that space?
I guess it's because it comes from. It's like a tapping into. It's like a. There's no distractions. It's just like I'm in the sound and the sensation. I guess it's because you're hearing music. If I close the sense of the eyes, I'm completely in the sound. And then it's physical and in the sound. If I open my eyes, it's this extremely powerful sense that we use so much with so much information and like all these other beings and people and energies that I'm then aware of and looking at. That's so distracting to the sound, you know, and my connection with the sound.
How have you managed to overcome the opening of the eyes then?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, it's just started since doing house concerts. I needed to make gigs as intimate as I possibly could in order for me to feel safe to come out. I mean, I'm Cancerian, it doesn't really matter about that, but it's like this shell element of going inwards, and then I sing from this quite inward, cavey place, and it's almost all whispery and quiet, and that's how it, where it started, and then people almost come into that, so that's where I started doing it, because it was shy, I was shy.
But now, that related to the title of that Loeb track?
Which one?
Inward outburst. It sounds like it from what you're talking about.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Well, that's something that different, that similar, the same thing of going in. Yeah. But with house concerts, because they're so held, such held spaces, it feels so safe. I I know what it is. It's like when I close my eyes in a room that I can't understand, or when there's loads of distractions, I close my eyes to hold myself basically while I'm playing, because it's intense. So if I open my eyes, it's more brave. But it's I've been really enjoying it. It's a whole other dimension for me now of performing, because I'm actually, with the house concerts, I started practicing just sending myself out into the room and just being out really with the audience and feeling these, like, just feeling these connections going on, and feeling how much more energy basically it's not me doing it, the music is doing it, isn't it? Right. The music is holding the space, and the more able I am, the more up for it I am to just energetically go out into the audience, it's like these amazing things happen. I don't know how to explain it. But.
So these you're primarily doing these in Europe, right?
And yeah.
Which is, so you did them in Holland? Do you do them in Holland quite regularly?
Yeah.
Where else do you do them?
I've done, well, it's mostly been Holland. I've done a couple in Germany and Belgium, just which is all next door.
Did you feel like there was a difference in the kind of people that in the, was, I'm trying to say, like, can you feel that you're in another country even though you're doing a house concert?
Between those three countries?
Yeah. Or even if you've done them over here, is it kind of like the intimacy of the gig?
Yeah, I've done a few here as well. You can feel the culture of the people, definitely. I've done some in Menorca as well, and Ibiza, just random, you know, places.
What's the smallest? What's the smallest number of people that you've had at a house concert?
Like 8. That's hard work.
Wow, that's hard work. That's intense, though, in its own way. You know? Like you've really got a you're really aware of those 8 people.
Yeah, that was the hard. I mean, that's really hard when it's that small. Last year I did 16 house concerts in 18 days, which is just insane. It's really silly. Wasn't really planned like that. They just kept getting filled up, and a couple of them were like 8 people or something. I try and do 25 people minimum, and then that feels nice.
Like a better number.
Yeah, and that works. It works really nicely. It's magical. It feels really like, it's definitely brought more of myself out, and got really used to singing without a microphone, and really used to having nothing in between me and the people, and just feels like you can go so deep into the music. Like people just go really with you, because you don't I don't have to use a lot of energy holding the space like you do in other venues where, you know, there's not really a container, so I have to actually hold quite a lot of the container, and then that can be quite exhausting. When it's already there in the walls and in the cozy space of a living room, people have done so much of that already that you can just go really deep with people, and it's just like magical.
I bet. Have you thought about recording any of them, or do you record them?
Recorded a few. I don't think I ever actually listened back to them. Yeah, I could do more, but
yeah. It might be nice. I just see like a kind of like a house concert CD of like different songs recorded in different living rooms in different places.
Yeah, it'd be beautiful.
It's quite a nice thread. Mm. So it's 2017. It's another year.
Is it really?
It is. And you're planning to do a new record. Are you not Carrie?
Yep, I am.
So what's are you going to do another Kickstarter? Is that the plan?
Yeah, I'm going to do, I use Indiegogo.
Oh, Indiegogo.
But I mean, it's the same principle. Yeah, I am, yeah.
And how are you feeling about going into that whole process again of studio and breaking it down, building it up?
I feel really excited about it, depending on the day and the time, sometimes I feel, overall, I feel really excited and light and joyful about it, actually, which I'm really, that's the most amazing place I could be in, because, you know, it can also be quite heavy sometimes trying to just keep being a musician, and I've spent like quite a lot of the last few years questioning why and what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So actually, when I uncover all of the like details of it all, with all the blah about how to run a business and this and that, actually I've found that underneath it all, there's just this like just sweet, innocent joy in me for playing music, and total awe and wonder and gratitude for music. You know, I'm just absolutely, completely like devoted almost, like it feels devotional a little bit, which is lovely to music. And it's not like I'm sort of like tied to it forever and have any sort of commitments to it on that level. It's just it feels so like it's been such a guiding light for me all my life, and you know, and I learn and learn and learn and learn so much from it. So that's there in it. So then to go into the studio is just heavenly.
So on the last album, you had like a lot of different musicians, there's a lot of layers, there's a lot of sounds. But it sounds like that was quite a crafting process to go through, quite a long process. What's your feeling for the next one? Are you going to strip it back a bit, or is that a closely guarded secret?
Sort of work out, it feels like I have to work out what it wants, the songs want.
Okay.
They feel like little beings.
So they take on a life of their own once you get into the studio.
They completely do. And also I just, because I don't have anyone I need to follow orders from or impress or tick any boxes, I just do what I do. I do what I love, and I'm not following anything else, you know.
Sure.
So and I don't have a record company or anything, so I just do what I love. And really what I love is producing. I love doing those textured sort of collecting instruments from around the world that I love. And I'm not going to probably do it as much as I did the last one. That was a big learning process, and it was quite indulgent in a joyful way.
Yeah.
Just like, what can we, just putting everything we could at it and having loads of fun. But
yeah.
I think I learned loads from that experience. And
were you doing production bits yourself on that as well?
Yeah, I co-produced it. Yeah, with my percussionist and my engineer and producer. We just all, you know, I know every decibel of every gap of sound in that. Like, I mean, I just had so many ideas of what I wanted. And it's probably a bit like writing a book, you know. It's like the ball starts rolling, and then just really get, almost feel guided. And it just actually, like, it almost hurts until they're right. I mean, it just, there's a clear point where it's just, it's home. And then sometimes it feels like, oh my God, we've completely messed this song up. We've completely lost it. We've fucked it up. What are we going to do now? Like, we've lost the spirit of the song. Like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then sort of peel everything back and try and find the coal,
take
baby.
Take the
cowbell
off.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, you just think, where the hell is this going to go? And somehow they find their way. And, like, that's my commitment to it, is I just keep going until I feel like they're home, feel like they've landed and they feel good. And it's almost like dressing them in these beautiful clothes or something and just doing my best, like raising a child, I guess. And then you, like, let them go. And it's really what it feels like. So I don't really know what's going to happen, but I've got... I'd get quite excited about it. And it can be simple as well. Like, I know that it doesn't... I do want to also honour how powerful just a voice and a guitar can be as well. Or even just a voice, or just, you know, the space. And I want to honour that as much as... Also, don't want to be afraid of having things to click tracks or electronic stuff going on, or, you know, making much bigger, fatter sounds. I'm really... want to do that too, just play with it, you know, just whatever, just be. I think it's probably going to be a bit like a patchwork quilt again, because that's, I guess, a bit more like what I'm like.
Nice.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. So you've got everything written, have you, or is it like a case of you write the because you've been performing new songs recently, which sound really lovely.
Thank you.
Do they? Is that? Is it the case that they're at a certain level of development to play live, and then when you go to the studio, they develop further? Like you might, they're not finished before, unless until they're recorded, they're not finished. Would you say?
Yeah, I guess so. I feel like sometimes I'm probably doing it in a maybe wrong order, as in I'm playing all these songs live now before they're recorded, and then people are asking, they want to buy them and I don't have it yet. And then once I record them, I'm probably bored of playing those songs and I'll start playing with these other songs. And if I had a business mind, I'd probably like keep them all and then play them when it was released. But I'm just playing them as they come. And yeah, they're
but
not really...
But there's something really nice about that as well, because it's kind of, it feels really authentic. You're sharing, you're excited to share something new that's...
Yeah.
And I think that comes across with people when they go... And they go to a concert as well.
Yeah,
it's exciting to hear something that's not been released.
Yeah,
from the audience member's point of view, it's like, oh, new music.
Yeah,
we got to hear new music. And no one else can hear it. Well, the only people that can hear it are the people that will come to the shows.
It's true, and there is something lovely for me about that. I feel a bit nervous and scared if I just like bring out a new song that's never been played before and see how it works in the room, see what happens. And it's like, I don't know what it's like until it meets other people. It's what it feels like. Like it's a certain way when I play it on my own, and then you sort of christen them almost. And, you know, and some songs I play for a little while and get the energy of people sort of being like, yeah, it's all right, you know, I prefer your other one. And there's been a couple on this journey I've been feeling like, no, I'm going to stick with this. Because lots of times if I get a bit of a flat energy, I just sort of leave them. But there's a couple that I've just been going, no, I've got this feeling that there's something magical about this. I'm going to keep playing. And and it's happened with both of them, actually, that I kept going with them. And I even got my band to play them, even though they were a little bit like, yeah, it's all right. And then the last couple of gigs that we did, like everyone at the end of the gig came and said those songs. And they were like, yes, you know, it's like, yes, I knew it. And it just, sometimes it could be the change of one melody or a little harmony or a different rhythm coming in, or, you know. So it was like, because I can hear a lot of the time, a lot of the production of what I want in my head when I'm playing it. I'm hearing the rhythms and the instruments, but if obviously no one else is hearing that, so you know, I have to sort of like,
what do you mean you don't hear it? This is a complete song.
It's a mysterious process, music songwriting.
So going back to what you said earlier, you were talking about how you were questioning your musicianship. Was that the process you went through, or questioning what, if you really needed to be doing that, if that was the highest form of expression for you currently? You know, were you thinking about doing an acting career?
I was going to get into spiritual accounting, actually.
Spiritual accounting? Yeah. Is that like shamanic hairdressing?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the hot new thing.
Tantric hairdressing,
okay, oh God. Yeah, I don't even want to go down that road.
Yeah, no, what was the question?
I remember when I was, when we were living together, and there was a period where you weren't really singing or writing, you were just kind of living... and feeling maybe a bit disconnected from it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. God, I just don't know where to start with it, I guess. I went through a period of... I'm always going through periods where I'm slightly questioning it, or if you have a, you know, sometimes I pick up my guitar and I play, and I feel the magic and power of music, and sometimes I pick it up and it's like, oh, you know, another singer-songwriter with a guitar, like, yeah, singing away all their personal experiences, blah, 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 you know, and it can be divine and profound, or it can be just like blah, blah, blah. And
is that a familiar voice, though? I mean, if you've been playing for years and years and years, I'd imagine to some level that is, that's part of the process. It's like when you're writing, there's a little editing voice in the back going, that sounds shit, what are you writing that for? And there's another part of you going, just get out of the way so I can create something and get it out. So it's kind of like the inner critic, you know, the inner critic.
Yeah, the inner critic's always been there, but I think, and I've been starting to notice, to the extent that that actually has been there without me realising that's what it was. But alongside that aside, what I was really doing was, I found myself from August to December last summer, before the one we just had, with basically 6 months of concerts and gigs that I was turning up to that I didn't want to be there for. And it got extreme, and I've had that on and off, but it was incessant for months, and it was horrible, and I was just feeling like I had to keep turning up to these things,
like, and going through the motions,
and I didn't want to be there, and that felt awful, you know, like, and I was just having this voice in me just like, get off the stage. If you don't want to be there, don't do it. There's plenty of other people dying to have things to be heard and said, but get off the stage, and what am I doing it for? And so I stopped. I basically started realizing that, you know, it's just like input and output. If I'm always putting it out and playing out, and not, it's, music's a byproduct of my life, so I need to be really going to deeper levels of honesty and challenge and growth and understanding in myself, away from music even. Sure. And then I like pick up the guitar and I write about it, but
yeah, because that's where it starts originally. Yeah. Right, it's like there's something in your heart that you want to express, put words to, put music to.
Yeah,
after a while you need to refresh those experiences.
Yeah, and sort of just questioning what, yeah, just checking it was a complete yes, basically. I wanted to find a complete yes in myself about what I wanted to be doing. And if I didn't have a complete yes, I didn't want to do it. You know, that was like a really decision in me. Like, I just want to be doing complete yeses in my life. And so easy to compromise, because we've been brought up compromising with everything, like, in a way, like, not being doomed about it. We've, you know, had amazing upbringing, but it's just our culture is sort of used to compromising in lots of ways. And I just wanted to dare to just to like let this character of whoever I've created through music sort of strip back. It's like, maybe I have to do something else in my life. Like, great. Yeah. But it's sort of come back round, actually. And I've been shown in really beautiful ways, like, the power of music. And it's like, yeah, there's millions of other things I could do in my life. And music is like lifetimes of exploration. And like, I've come this far with it. There's a million different pathways and depths to go with it. And I'm still married to it, basically. Like, I feel like...
It's like you went to music counselling
for
yourself.
Yeah.
And decided you were still in love with it.
I did. Yeah, no, exactly. That's what it was like. Yeah.
Actually, we can make this work, Carrie. Yeah. Okay, Carrie.
Yeah, we're having a second honeymoon. We're renewing. I renewed my vows. That's what I did. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
That's great. How did you even get started in playing and singing? Where does that start?
Well, I think I just always loved singing, and I'm from a musical family. My dad has played in bands all his life since he was 14. He plays bass and sings, loves harmonies. He really loves Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young and Eagles and the Beatles and all that sort of stuff, like close harmony sort of stuff. And my grandfather as well was really good piano player and violin player, and my aunt plays. So it's sort of in my family.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
My mum loved singing and was always getting us singing around the house. And We had a really good music teacher at school, which was just such a blessing.
That's a big thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, she was great. And we had, you know, even like the, even the hymns, I just loved. They, we were singing these really lovely, really lovely songs, you know, really
did
nice.
Did you go to C of E school?
At C of E?
Church of England.
No, it was just a normal...
But the hymns kind of were... Was
yeah,
it the kind
I guess
of...
so, yeah.
Oh, God.
They were Christian vibes, yeah. But it was, they were just, there were also lots of kids' songs and, yeah, so I just, our car journeys was like me and my brother and my sister, like, singing three-part harmonies in the back seat, you know, like, it was just completely normal for us. So I was like, really, you know, it's amazing, actually. So lucky to have had that. And piano lessons I had, and I just never got told to shut up, basically, and got supported in it, and... Yeah. And actually, this couple, Mark and Helen Johnson, came to our school, and they were writing kids' songs. Actually, Christian, but, like, really good songwriters, and these sweet songs about different seasons, and, like, they were, like, really good songwriters, and they got five schools to record their albums for them. And then in the end, they picked eight kids from the schools because... they wanted the quality to be more in a studio, and I was one of the kids. So from probably 8 years old, I was like in studios like twice a year.
That's
recording cool. albums with these
twice a year.
Yeah, with these choirs with eight of us. So I was already, you know, really learned like to start to hear my voice in that setting of microphones and headphones, and that, you know, that massively
that's
helped.
Quite an early That's amazing.
Yeah.
Huh. Have you ever dug up any of those old recordings to see if you can hear yourself?
Yeah, I think I've got them. They're all tape cassettes. Oh, really? And I had my I had the first solo, and I remember this, like...
Wow.
They had never done a solo before, and there was this one verse, and I'd said to them, that the last line of the verse, I just said, shouldn't it be this word instead of that, because it just rhymed better, and they were really excited that it, and then they were like, okay, you're going to sing it. And I remember this feeling, like, of just hearing, you know, like, waiting, all the nerves in the body, and then waiting, you just start hearing your voice and just on its own, you know, in a studio setting. I'd never heard it before. And it's such a treat, you know, to be in the studio space.
I just had an image of, you know, when you used to get CDs and people used to do hidden tracks, like you press play on the first track and then you press rewind and it goes like into minus numbers and there's a hidden thing, and like maybe it could be that little snippet of your first ever song.
Oh, that would be sweet.
So sweet.
That would be. It's a good idea. Remix it.
Yeah.
Big fat dub remix.
Well, there's, yeah, that would be interesting. So when did you pick up a guitar then, if you started on piano?
I was about 15. I've started writing songs on piano when I was probably 12 or something. Yeah, and then I picked up the guitar and I played pretty badly for quite a while. I just used it to write songs, and then realised I couldn't carry my piano around, and then I just have been a traveller since. I feel like I've been travelling around since I was 15 almost, like, just in a way, like, I was still I was still living both parents' houses at that age, but I felt like I was already, you know, it's funny how so much of us is already shaped from all the way back then as what our path's going to be somehow.
Because you often refer to yourself as a bit of a nomad. I've noticed.
Do I?
Or maybe other people refer to you as a nomad, I don't know. But you do a lot of travelling, don't you? And you've been to loads and loads of places. Was there anything in particular that had an impact at you when you were at a younger age, like one of the first big travel experiences where you were kind of like, I'm an adult in the big world now with my guitar? Do you know what I mean? Or is that over romanticizing it a little bit? Did you head out into the world with your guitar case?
I did, yeah,
literally.
Yeah, well, when I was 18, that was when I could leave.
Yeah.
And I did. I mean, I stayed, I did school and college to 18, and then my parents wanted me to go to uni, and my brother and sister did, and I wanted to go to Australia for a year. And, you know, they sort of, their advice was, if you go, you're not going to come back to study. We would really love you to stay and study. And I just needed to go. So so I just worked. I worked 80 hours a week in this 80. Pub.
Wow.
The chef went away to get married. So I was doing the bar. I was doing the kitchen all day.
Cooking? Well, doing the cooking?
Yeah, for like a sort of student pub.
Okay.
It was like burgers and chips and stuff. From like 11.
Why have I never been served any of these specialities?
Yeah, right. Yeah, or like deep fried onion rings.
The curry burger.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Wow, I had no idea.
I mean, I just did it for 2 months or something, and then I.
Then
go.
You skipped off to Australia.
And then I just went with my guitar, and actually, I met this guy at a festival. Who was a really good harmony singer, and we really clicked immediately. We knew a couple of the same songs, and we just sang really well together and got really excited, and we started busking together, and we made a little band called Many Angels. I'm sure you shouldn't say this out loud. And we bussed around Byron Bay in the East Coast, and we made hundreds and hundreds of euros and made a CD.
Wow.
And we were just flying. We just loved it. And then we started playing at festivals and selling the CD everywhere, and went off into the desert.
And
so
was this still kind of 18, 19?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that
That's
was
such a cool experience for a young woman to have.
Yeah.
You know, becoming financially independent in a way and creating at the same time and doing it in an awesome traveling capacity.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a dream come true at that age.
I guess it just showed me, it just completely flowed, you know. And I definitely wasn't doing it just for the money. I was just doing it because it was just amazing to play. And it was just hand to mouth, but it was, you know, when you're that age and you're traveling around, it was just, when we made our CD, it just sort of worked, and it showed me that I could make a living from music, basically. And I've just been doing that ever since. And then I came home and tried to go to uni for a day, and I went for one day.
Where was that? Which university?
South Bank.
Okay. What did you sign up for?
Media studies.
Okay.
Because I didn't know what to do, basically. Yeah. And I was just making it up, and I just thought, I'm not going to go there.
Do you think that was partly just like to please your parents?
Yeah, and conform with what everyone else, what you're told you have
Everyone's
to do
to
be something.
At 21.
And it's scary when you're that age too. Mm. I mean, it's just like, if you don't do this, you're going to fail, and you're going to not make it in the world. So this is what you need to do. And it was scary not to do, but I couldn't by then.
But you'd already had that experience of trusting your intuition, telling
you
to go to this place, and then getting there and having this amazing experience.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like there's no going back from
there
from
wasn't
that.
Really. There wasn't really. And that year I learnt a lot of my beliefs that I feel I still follow these days, of just sort of, you know, a trust in like the wisdom of things and manifesting and doing what you, I don't know, just like suddenly being free like that, and just every day just going with the flow and seeing what happens. And the more positivity I put on things, the more I got back. And you know that thing where you start to feel.
That's such a massive learning, though.
Yeah, it's huge.
And a certain level of risk as well involved in even going and doing that, which I think a lot of people, especially at that age, would find really difficult to do, to make that, you know, to make that jump to that fluidity, that level of fluidity. So when you got back, you pretty much just carried on playing and writing.
Yeah.
Into your early 20s?
Yeah.
So have you ever worked another, any kind of traditional? Have you pretty much?
What have I done? I mean, I remember working in a sports shop when I was 15. Did the old telesales as well at some point. At that age. I mean, after that, what have I done? Bits and bobs of stuff.
Was there a point where you were like, I don't want to do any of that. This is.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of stuff I just did when I was 15,
sure.
16. After that, I basically did bar. I came back, I worked in the same bar again for a bit more, and I went travelling. Travelling's been, travelling was as much up there as music for me. I would work, buy a ticket to go somewhere and go and be writing as I went everywhere, always with my guitar playing. It wasn't like to be a professional musician. It was just travelling and music was just with me all the time. And then, and that was 1920, I came back, my early 20s, and I was sort of reluctant to be on stage because I was so shy, but I played at Glastonbury Festival just on a small little stage there, an open mic night, and the stage, Small World stage, the guy that ran it just really loved it and supported me and basically just invited me to loads of festivals after that. So then I suddenly had my tickets in to all these festivals every summer, and I did that for ages.
Mm.
And then I think it changed to being more professional when I bumped into Damien Rice, this Irish singer-songwriter at Glastonbury. I was a fire twirling with a fire stick and I had my djembe and I was on my way to seeing a friend play, and he asked me if I played djembe and I said yes, and he said, do you want to come and play a gig with me?
Wow.
So so I went and sat next to Damien Rice, like tapping away on my djembe, like completely blown away by
what. Where was this he playing being. At the time?
He was actually playing in Small World. He was doing a little random gig.
Was this when he was when he was riding the crest of his big popularity wave, or before?
Yeah, it was just building up to it.
Yeah.
So that he played at the other stage, that festival, and the album was just coming out. And
that's O, right?
Yeah, and that was really good friendship for me because it was a little window into, he was a really good friend of mine for a bit, and I basically just vagabonded around with him a little while he sort of, was just blown away by suddenly having like insane amounts of money in his bank account and and sudden fame and trying to work out what to do with it. And he's an amazing guy and he thinks a lot and, it's just sort of...
Wow, sounds like quite a divine meeting in a way. Like you've got this guy who's kind of a little ahead down the road and,
Yeah, it was great. It's just fascinating, the whole thing of, that's the extreme, fame, sure. And what supposedly every musician is right, aiming for, right. Even though that's not true at all. I mean, everyone assumes a lot of the time that you're trying to be famous, but it's such a bizarre... Ask for that.
It just kind of landed with him.
Well, he was. I mean, he wasn't asking to be famous, but he was just... I mean, the whole subject of fame is just bizarre,
it's weird,
isn't it?
Isn't it?
And I have a lot of... I mean, it's as scary as it is exciting, I imagine. I wouldn't exactly even wish it on anybody in a way, there's a balance. Some people think it's great because you're going to have loads of money. I mean, there's like being rich and there's being famous anyway, isn't there? And they're very different things. And when you put that combination together, and then add art to it and pure expression, that's like... can very easily be poison
muddy
for
waters.
People. Yeah, and I think anyone that gets given that hand has to probably work very hard at, has to be very in touch with themselves to not let it eat them up whole, So I'm fascinated in that. So I've spent a little bit of time in random situations like that with people that are in that world, and I find it really interesting.
That's where I guess the greater degree of professionalism comes into it, and... learning that the reality of making a living in this world as a musician means you've got to have some level of business, of treating your work as a profession.
Totally.
And what comes with that, especially if you're managing it all yourself, So it sounds like he was just kind of showing you how to how to be in that situation, taking it to the next level for you. So then you went on tour. You went on tour with him at one point.
Yeah, that year he was about to do a 12-day tour of the UK, and so he asked me to support him doing that. So I was so that was amazing because I'd just been busking and playing at little festivals, and suddenly I was
busking to play. What sort of venues was he playing?
Shepherd's Bush Empire was the last venue.
But that's big. It's a big place.
Yeah. So, you know, it was sort of up to 2,500 people there.
Did that feel like just really surreal?
It was insane. It was
going from a little small stages and busking to playing in front of hundreds of people.
Yeah. But it was great. It was a proper initiation for me. I felt like the first gig I can't remember the order, but I think maybe we even started in Glasgow, Leeds, and then came down to London. And we were travelling this big double-decker pink bus.
Pink bus.
It was so surreal. You wake up, you sleep in the night, wake up and you look out the window and you're in the middle of a university complex with all these students walking around, and you feel like this space pod's just landed. It's just really weird. You don't know where you are. Yeah, it's amazing. Great. I mean, going on tour is amazing, but that was my first tour. But yeah, the first gig I did, I was sitting down and I was nervous and a bit inward, and it was all right. And then I got off stage and something in me was like, this is not going to work, you know. And Damien was pushing me, like, don't keep all your most powerful songs later on. Start with it. Just start with that song that you're most scared of playing. And I just felt like I've got to stand up. So the second gig, I just stood up. I started with that song and it just was magic. And I sold out of all the CDs I had on that one night. It just felt like something had just shifted in me, and I just understood something of not holding back, you know. Yeah. And they're an amazing audience because they love, you know, they love like deep, honest, raw music. Damien's perfect, just amazing for that. So it was a really good insight into that world. And it's just been years and years of so many different chapters to it all.
And then, but you'd recorded some stuff at that point.
Yeah.
But was this just kind of you doing demos and recording them to sell at gigs? Nothing. Did you record anything that you were kind of trying to put out?
Yeah. Well, I had a manager back then that we were thinking about working together, and then we sort of went for it with this tour. We thought, let's just really go for it and start an album, and because there was sort of some interest around, and to maybe sign me or whatever. And I mean, I was still pretty young. I was sort of 21 or something, and still feeling pretty scared of the music industry and pretty out of my depth in a way, surrounded by people all saying different things about how I should be and working with all these different producers. And I found it actually really, really difficult. And I was working with this manager at the time's producer. She had all her producers that she wanted. You know, it was like a whole little ship
She'd
of people.
She'd lined them up to work on
and
it.
And that was, it was really difficult in a way. But then I started working with this lovely guy, Dave Meegan. It feels funny talking about this. It's such a long time ago. And we basically started recording an album, and he was amazing to work with, but it took a long time and we never finished it, and it was getting more and more like, we have to finish this. And for various reasons, it just wasn't really happening in the end. And, he's still a friend of mine, but I haven't seen him for years. But anyway, it was sort of all fell apart in the end. It just wasn't working. I think in the end, the manager and me, we just wanted different things, you know, and I just couldn't follow that major record company vibe or even independent. It just felt like I didn't I just couldn't get my head around it, you know, and I couldn't be what they were wanting me to be and doing and fit into this box. And it's taken me years to even admit that it is a business and that that's what I'm doing and that that's okay, you know.
There's a side to it that's business.
Yeah, related. And that's beautiful. I mean, I am running a business. I'm doing that. And the more I squirm away from that, the less it works. It's like there's nothing wrong with that. And it doesn't dilute the music or the purity of the art or anything. It's just how it is, but...
It's interesting though, because back in that kind of time period, it was more unusual for artists to take things into their own hands. It was very much like, the Holy Grail is to get signed, and you know, it was all very much in the hands of record companies, and there was far less people doing things themselves.
Yeah,
it was kind of like considered a bit odd if you did that, right? It's a bit risky.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like, it's almost the norm in a way. Like people can take so much charge of their own creative process, the releasing, you know, there's a few things that they won't be able to do, but yeah, but you were doing that. You kind of had a strong urge to do that, did you feel like you wanted the control of it yourself, or you didn't want to let in those kind of outside influences to dilute it a bit? Or
I back then it was really tricky for me to be able to focus on what on earth I wanted or how to do it. All I could really tell was what didn't feel right, and there were lots of things that didn't feel right. And I completely empathise with how difficult it probably was to work with me in that sense, because like they're so personal to me, this music, that when it doesn't feel right, it actually, like I said before, it almost hurts. Like it feels uncomfortable, and they're like, "Well, how do you want it to be then?" And I'm almost like, "I don't know, but just not that," you know, because I'd never had any experience of production or any other ways of how to do it. And I spent actually quite a long time making loads of different demos until. After that, actually, feeling pretty exasperated by how on earth to do it, until I made what I would then call my first album, even though I'd recorded so many demos, which is this album called The Kitchen Table. It's nice to remember that, actually. That was a sort of, that was 2009. So that was quite a few years of, like, wandering around and working out how on earth to do it. And I worked with this producer, Matt Tweed, and... I don't know what happened. I think it was just the way that he worked, and a really good friend of mine, Martha Tilston, who's a singer-songwriter, beautiful singer-songwriter, lives in Cornwall, who's really successful at what she does, and she's been such a mentor to me, and really good at giving advice and supportive, and he produced her stuff. And she just said, "Why don't you just try working with Matt?" And it was basically just record three versions of the song, voice guitar together, choose the best take, then produce it from there, you know.
Wow.
And it just takes all of the thing of, like, direct. Click tracks and this and that, and just to keep it as live as possible, to keep that element of just the voice and guitar together, and it not being too precious and trying to cut it all up and, you know, digitalize everything. It was so with that sort of organicness of the foundation of it, then we could just add different instruments, and I got really excited about that, and have amazing string players that I know, and a bassoon player that I was playing with. It's just bizarre, but it sounds so nice with it, and my brother sang harmonies, and I just started going bit by bit, bite-sized chunks, and it
your
just...
Brother, did you say your brother sang harmonies?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. Like a little... flick back to the time in the car.
He's on both my albums,
really?
Actually. He's the male voice on them, my
amazing.
Twin.
That's so nice that you can bring him into to your musical world.
Yeah, she's playing bass on my first album as well, but and that's just a joy, because you can just collect, you know, like, oh, I remember this violin player, like, I should contact them and, like, get them in the studio, and they just play on it, and you just cry because it sounds so good, and you know, or like you try something, it doesn't quite work, and it was sort of, I really liked working with Matt because he's very visual. He really sees things in colours like I do, and sort of soundscapes as places. Like I see my songs as deserts or like ocean or you right. know like different so Elemental. I'd say like this one always I always see this camel ride in the desert. It's one of my songs, Thousand Days, so he even color in the different tracks all these desert colors, so like because you're spending hours looking at the screen, so yeah. we sort of make this visual world of,
connect that inner landscape with yeah. what you're producing,
and we just had loads of fun sort of just like being ridiculous and laughing loads and taking the piss out of my songs and and I just needed that much humor and lightness and it sort of worked, yeah. And then I did that for the second one too, but sort of another level of it.
So for the second one you recorded partly in South Africa. And how did that come about? Did someone invite you, or did you decide to go down there, or how did that work? I guess you'd been there before on your travels, maybe.
I had been there before, yeah. And I'd written a song, Mamakita, that I'd started in England, and then my first trip out there. I had a really strong time out there with just being on that continent, I guess, and for some reason I was really drawn to that place. And when I first started writing this song, Mamakita, I always saw these feet dancing on red earth. It was something about this red earth colour that I've always loved, and you know how countries sort of just draw you, you don't even know why. Like specifically some countries just really pull me there, and South Africa just seemed to be for some reason somewhere I needed to go to learn some things I needed to learn. And that song, Mamakita, just was finished out there. And so I always heard loads of voices on it, and it was this longing that I had to somehow start to combine my love of music from around the world, from Africa actually. A lot of music that I hear in Africa I absolutely love. I've always loved it. I've no idea why. It was the only music I could dance to when I was younger. I would just drop all my things and start dancing if I heard it. It's just so strong. I don't know why.
Well, the rhythms are so primal, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, exactly.
They're kind of like your body starts moving.
Exactly.
Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been brought up completely without that music, but I loved it, and I never really knew how on earth to start combining it. So Mamakita was just a complete, just joy and fun of putting, you know, I mean, it just seemed to really want kora on it and dindin and just different instrumentation. And then these Zulu singers that I met out there were up for singing on it, and they asked me what the song was about, and they were touched by it. And we got in the studio and they just started singing these amazing things on it, and it's just like felt like a complete blessing, you know. It just felt like they were just sort of yeah, it felt like they were blessing the song. That's what it felt like. The things they're singing are just affirmations of what I'm saying and supporting what I'm saying. And I'd never worked with other vocalists before, and I'd love to do that more on the next album. So yeah, that was just a sort of treat for me to get to do
something
that.
Something about Africa. I remember when I went to South Africa the first time, there was a really strong sense of this kind of sense of home, which I'd never really... It's funny, isn't it? You can be born and brought up somewhere that's called your home, and then you can go somewhere thousands of miles away that you've never been to before, and it feels more like home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really confused me at the time. So standing in this country, like, whoa, God, there's a real resonance here. It was almost like you could almost feel it in the air. Something about being on this land that I'd never had that experience before, you know, going to another country. There's a real powerful spirit, I guess you could say. And getting to work with people from that land, singing in their language. It's like a real meeting of cultures.
Yeah, it felt like that, and it felt like I was a bit shy of that, because I guess shy of being judged, or like judged to be trying to be something else, or
something.
Yeah, or like there was some sort of who am I to be so indulgent or get to do that, something of that. I don't know why,
in your head.
Yeah, in my head.
Yeah.
and almost I was so hungry to like to be surrounded in music from that place that I didn't really even want to play my music over there. I wanted to sort of hear the music of the people I was meeting. But that was what felt really powerful about it for me, to actually to play Mama Keita and dare to be like, this is just who I am and what I'm doing, and then have these people actually want be up for collaborating on it felt really healing somehow. I don't know why, for me, just to sort of, you know, it's sort of, it's easy to sort of drop what I've been given and be hungry to get to, there's something of that of other cultures and other lands that I feel like I haven't got so much of from my culture and my land, and I've got tons of other things.
Yeah.
So there's a hunger for it. So it's easy to turn up there and drop everything that I've got and just absorb. But actually, to bring what I have, actually that happened. I was in the Gambia last February. I've finally got to West Africa, which is where I've wanted to go to for so many years, and it was amazing for me, because I I was on this friend's land, and it's sort of a music centre a little bit, and this lovely guy was doing djembe classes with some people, really good class, and I sort of sat in on it, and they were playing all day, so you could hear all these amazing rhythms and dindins and drums all day. It was incredible, and by the end of the day I was actually felt full of drums. And I just had this, it was really nice, I had this longing to hear an English folk song. I was like, God, now I just want to hear an English folk song. And I was washing my clothes out there in this, because we're just out on this land. And I started singing this song, and then the djembe teacher had his phone, and I could hear this music coming from it. And I was like, that sounds so familiar. And I walked over, and he was listening to Martha Tilston, who's like my friend that lives in Cornwall. She's as folky as you can get. And this djembe player in the middle of the Gambia, and he's like, you know Martha, that's my favourite music. I listen to it all the time.
Wow.
And it blew me away, you know.
There's some magic going on there.
Yeah, and he loves English folk music, and he knew all these musicians that... And it really, you know, it's really touched me that,
That's amazing.
We all get drawn to, that he's probably just drawn to these green Celtic lands, just like I'm drawn to this red earth. And
switching the perspective up completely. Wow, but right in front of you.
Brilliant.
That's amazing. Wow, what a lesson.
Yeah. I was happy to go and tell Martha that.
Yeah, there's a man. You've got a super fan in the Gambia.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. and then there was somebody from Ladysmith Black Man Barzo that was on that as well. And that was around the same time. Were you on the same trip there?
Yeah, that was the same trip. Yeah. Oh, not in the Gambia, but in South Africa. Yeah, for Home to the Invisible, it was three Zulu singers. It was Albert Makibu. So I can't pronounce his surname. Really lovely. He's sort of in his 70s now, from Ladysmith Black Man Barzo. A beautiful man. Gosh, he was so, so humble and lovely. Really lovely guy. And Zamo, who orchestrated all the music for Miriam Makeba. So he was this incredible singer, really deep voice. And I'd absolutely love to work with him again at some point. And this amazing woman, Lou Dlamini. And the three of them, we just had a few hours basically in the studio, and we just sort of like, it could have, there was one point where it's like, how is this going to work? And it just, you know, they were just, Lou and Zama have worked together a lot before, and they were just sort of sparking off. And then Albert was going into the vocal booth, and he just said to me, Carrie, come in here. I don't want to be here on my own. So I just went into this little vocal booth where he was recording, and he just was like, tell me what the song's about. So I was standing there, and he had the microphone and headphones on, and I'd just say, it's actually like, it's about coming home to the little home inside me. And he'd be like, and then like, tell me more. And I'd be like, well, it's just like, and I would just be telling him the story, and then he'd be singing as I told him. And he's just, it was such a nice way to, you know, he was just literally just feeding off what he was saying. And yeah, it was lovely, really lovely.
Again, just magic, magical moment. Somebody like that with such a rich,
rich history. I mean, he was telling me some of the stories of Ladysmith, Blackman and Vassar, and how they, just the time in which they were, the time in which they were sort of becoming famous was like really deep in the apartheid time, and they weren't actually allowed to travel at all. And they were like secretly traveling around, and they were playing, and they were sort of saying they'd have to hide in places, and when they'd almost get caught, they would sort of sing and play music, actually, and just befriend people around them that would sort of want them to keep going. And it was crazy stories he was telling us. It was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really powerful to meet him. And I mean, I grew up listening to that album, you know, I know his voice so well, and to have his voice somewhere singing with me, it was just, oh, God. I mean, that's, music is just amazing, you know, where it can take, like the rich pathways it can take. You really can't write it or decide where on earth you're going to go next. You just stay, I guess that's just it. It's just, it's like being a receptor, you're just staying open to
the influences that you
and where across. The yes is, that's really where I got to it. It's like
where the yes is,
yeah, like what feels, I mean, I've got this body, like this vessel, and then the music is going through this body and this vessel, and my job is, I guess, just to sort of be receptive to that. Or, and then I've obviously got my personal experiences which I write about, but there's a few things going on there. But then with where it wants to go or where I want to go, it feels like, it just feels like a, like quite other, I guess it's just art, isn't it? Or like the sort of, It just can't be boxed in or organised or tamed. I mean, obviously you organise tours and dates and stuff, but there's,
as part of the process, there's a freedom in letting come through whatever comes through.
Yeah.
Before it gets shaped, I guess you call it. You could say, you know.
I mean, it's just different, I guess, if you've got a job where you go to work and you. You have a certain amount of things you need to do, and then you get to the end of the day and you go home, and then you can go up the ladder. And I mean, you just can't really do that with art, I don't think, in the same way. It's wild. It's got a wildness to it that doesn't want to be tamed, and it's not up to me to try and tame it. And if I do, I've tried before, I stop playing music. It just, the spirit disappears almost, you know. It's like it feels
it becomes,
like it needs a holding.
It becomes too clinical, becomes like there's too much... trying too hard to make something without the depth, you know.
Yeah, there's a magic to it. It feels like it's just, I don't know what another word to describe it, but there's something other of it, isn't it? It's
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you
so much for doing this and coming in and beating the January darkness with your wonderful stories.
Thanks for having me and asking me.
Is where is your online home these days?
It's carrietree.co.uk.
And then everything else fans out from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I advertise a lot of gigs on Facebook as well, because it's just, it's useful in that way too.
And you'll be shouting about the Indiegogo thing when that kicks off.
Yeah.
In a few months.
Yeah, I want to probably release it maybe in end of March. The campaign, and then I'm going to hopefully do a tour in mid-April maybe with my band. I've got beautiful musicians I've been playing with, and yeah, just like go for it. And
The next studio adventure.
Yeah. And still I'm still actually looking for who to work with in a way. I've got a few ideas, and also looking for just to make a little team of people to work more with. I've been doing a lot on my own, and I'm ready. I feel like the musicians I'm working with and me is sort of, I get something different now about where I want to take it. I'm quite excited about it. So I'm sort of calling out for a couple of other people to work with and make a little, like, feels like you make a little ship to go out to sea with or something. Like you have your crew and then you like, feels like
you set
that.
Sail for the open seas. Yeah.
Yeah.
and then put down your anchor.
Yeah.
In the studio.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jodie.
Thank you. Just me again, a few quick thank yous before I sign off. Thank you to you, dear listener, for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Please let me know if you enjoyed it, you got something out of it, you hated it, whatever. It'd be nice to hear from you. Thanks to Ben Chasney for the use of his wonderful track, Light of the Light. You can find out more of his music at sixorgans.com. And also thanks to Scott and Ryan of Drag City Records. They are at dragcity.com. If you enjoyed it and you have the inclination to do so, I would appreciate it. If you want to spread the word, you can like it, share it, tell your friends, all that good social media kind of stuff. And if you're listening through iTunes and you've got a couple of minutes, you want to write a little review, that would be amazing. But equally, if you don't, go and have a nice week, a couple of weeks, and I'll see you for episode number 3 very soon.
We found our way.